Hey, welcome to Crossroads. Folks, with all the recent damage for the hurricanes, there's a lot of debate taking place over where exactly all that FEMA money is going. Now look, relief efforts are still underway from a lot of states that got hit by the hurricane. At least 230 Americans have lost their lives, and a lot more lost their homes and their sources of income. Now, the relief efforts on both the FEMA side and on the private citizen side are now bringing focus to a contrast on the government programs for housing and feeding illegal immigrants, and especially to the money that FEMA has in fact spent on those programs. In fact, around $1.4 billion at least. Now, let's go over some of the claims that are coming out, and I want to show you kind of both sides and dig into some of the language. From what I've been seeing, there's a lot of technicality within language, and it seems that they're using that to say that all this is misinformation, when it's not really the case. Now, first off, FEMA has published a page on its own website specifically to address what it calls rumors around the relief efforts for Hurricane Helen. Let me start by showing you what they say, then we'll dig into this. Now, this is the official FEMA website. Hurricane Helen, rumor response, they say. They say, help keep yourself, your family, and your community safe after Hurricane Helen by being aware of rumors and scams and sharing official information from trusted sources. They say, do your part to stop the spread of rumors by doing these things. Find trusted sources of information. Share information from trusted sources and discourage others from sharing information from unverified sources. Now, I question what an unverified source is by their definition, but that's a statement, right? Now, look, it then goes on to address some of the different claims that are going around and declares that many of them are false. And I want to go over what they're actually saying and whether or not these claims are actually false, because from what I've seen, there's a lot of technicalities within the language itself. Now, let me start here. This is FEMA's website. They say, rumor, the FAA is restricting access to the airspace for Helen rescue and recovery operations. They say, fact, the FAA is not restricting access for recovery operations. And they say the FAA is coordinating closely with state and local officials to make sure everyone is operating safely in very crowded and congested airspace. Now, look, in my take, as a journalist who's been doing this for, you know, since 2006, you learn to start reading legalese the way that oftentimes through very minor changes in language, they can declare that something is true or false. The important part within that fact check is where they say they're working with officials to, quote, make sure everyone is operating safely in very crowded and congested airspace. And they also say the FAA is, quote, not restricting access for recovery operations. Now, what are they actually saying here, at least in my take? Now, I've seen some mixed claims on this. There actually have been a lot of people posting videos on X or YouTube where you have pilots who are saying, you know, helicopter pilots who are saying they were blocked from carrying out relief efforts. Many others have actually been using their helicopters to help. And so it is actually mixed. You do have some who say they've been blocked. You do have some who are actively helping them using their helicopters. And what it looks like is that it changes from place to place, different locations at different standards. Some of them are dealing with more crowded airspace. And I think that's the key word here, is they're dealing with crowded airspace and some areas are restricting it for that reason, at least according to them. Especially, I think, when you get to some of the more remote areas, that seems to be one of the big issues. Now, one of the big claims, though, I think one of the biggest ones going around, is that FEMA is out of money for disasters and that FEMA was giving hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, $1.4 billion for the last few years, to house illegal immigrants and feed them and take care of them. And a lot of Americans feel right now that, well, have illegal aliens been treated better than American citizens? Well, on FEMA's side, this is what they're saying. They say FEMA does not have enough money. This is the rumor they say, right? FEMA does not have enough money to provide disaster assistance for Helen. And they say, fact, FEMA has enough money right now for immediate response. Those are the important keywords here. And recovery needs. They say, if you were affected by Helen, do not hesitate to apply for disaster assistance, as there is a variety of help available for different needs. Now, look, they honestly kind of shot themselves in the foot on this one. The concerns were actually sparked by a statement directly from the chief of the Homeland Security Department, that's Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. He actually said this himself during a press gaggle aboard Air Force One last week. Here's what Mayorkas said, quote, "We are meeting the immediate needs with the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting, the one going to be hitting Florida soon." He says, "We do not have the funds." Quote, "We do not have the funds." That is DHS Secretary Mayorkas himself, a direct quote. He says, quote, "FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season and what is imminent." And so it's a bit strange when you look at it from this perspective. They're saying that it's false that they're out of money. The technicality is in the language. You have to take it in context of the recent fact check from FEMA about this. They say, quote, "FEMA has enough money right now for immediate response and recovery needs." And the key word there is immediate. They're saying basically right now at this current moment, they have enough money to carry out the relief efforts, but they're saying that they will not have it for the rest of the season. And especially with the new hurricane getting ready to hit, they're saying they don't have enough money to take care of that. That's what they're actually saying. And so when people are raising concerns about this, FEMA is out of money, well, FEMA's saying, well, we're not out of money right now, right? And that's where the technicality is coming in play. Now, the issue, again, is whether they have enough money for the long-term relief efforts. Because, look, for a lot of people who've had their houses destroyed or have no source of income, they're wondering, you know, where is my family going to stay? Where's my food going to come from? How are we going to take care of ourselves when we have lost everything? And especially in some of the more impoverished areas that have been hit. I mean, even in some of the wealthy areas, people don't always have money to fall back on. Meaning, what are they going to do? That is a challenge they're facing. And for a lot of these individuals, when they look and see the country is taking care of illegal immigrants and housing them and putting them up in fancy hotels in New York City, they wonder, why am I being treated this way and why are non-Americans being treated another way? Now, again, the big question will be that according to Alejandro Mayorkas himself, according to the chief of the Department of Homeland Security himself, while they may have money right now to take care of things within the current environment they're in, which is what he's saying, right, that they might not have it when the next hurricane hits, and that's going to make landfall this week. Now, that brings us to one of the big concerns right now, though. People believe the reason that FEMA does not have enough money is because FEMA was giving money to house and take care of illegal immigrants. And I want to show you the facts on this. I'll be talking about this after I come back from a quick break. Hey, welcome back. There's some heated debate right now over where the FEMA money is going for the recent hurricane disasters. Now, relief efforts are still underway in states that were hit by Hurricane Helene. At least 227 people have lost their lives so far, and a lot more lost their homes and their sources of income. The relief efforts are now bringing attention to concerns that FEMA may not have the money for the rest of the hurricane season. And people believe the reason that FEMA may not have enough money for the long term is not just the, you know, not just the immediate response, they're saying, is because they were giving massive amounts of money to house and take care of illegal immigrants. Now, let me start by showing you the fact check from FEMA, because they're saying that these are false claims. They're saying these are just rumors, and they're trying to get rid of these, right? They say this, rumor, funding for FEMA disaster response was diverted, and this is going to be the key word here, diverted to support international efforts on border-related issues. And they say, fact, this is false. No money is being diverted. Keep in mind that word, diverted. No money is being diverted from disaster response needs. They say FEMA's disaster response efforts and individual assistance is funded through the Disaster Relief Fund, which is a dedicated fund for disaster efforts. Disaster Relief Fund money has not been diverted to other non-disaster related efforts. So look, basically, it is the case They've been given huge amounts of money delegated to them to house and care for illegal immigrants. In fact, around $1.4 billion that's even, you know, on the surface. They're arguing that you can't quite make the comparison since the money for the hurricane efforts and disaster relief, that's coming from a specific, you know, delegated fund, which is the disaster relief fund, which is, you know, delegated differently. They're not diverting the disaster relief fund to go and take care of illegal immigrants. They have a different fund for them is what they're saying. And they didn't technically divert money between the two programs to give to illegal immigrants. But look, the issue a lot of critics are raising is that FEMA, they get a budget approved by Congress. And when they get a budget approved by Congress, well, look, if they delegate part of their budget to disaster relief and a massive part of their budget to housing and feeding and caring for illegal immigrants, well, they've delegated it. You could argue they didn't divert it, but they delegated it. And that's the argument here. Now look, this has brought a huge amount of attention to the amount of taxpayer money that has in fact been used to support illegal immigrants. And look, let me show you a few of the examples that have been going around. And I'm not just going to pull some random rumors. These are from the official FEMA website and the official website of the Department of Homeland Security. Here is FEMA from March of 2021. It says they awarded $110 million in supplemental humanitarian funding to the National Board for the Emergency Food and Shelter Program, which will distribute this money to NGOs, non-government organizations, and government organizations that have, quote, aided or will aid individuals and families encountered by the Department of Homeland Security at the southern U.S. border. In other words, they're giving the money to house and take care of illegal immigrants. That's one example. There's a lot of others. This is the Department of Homeland Security from August of 2023. They say the DHS through FEMA and CPB, Customs Border Protection, announced more than $77 million in grants to support border and interior communities, meaning not just the border, but also within the United States, communities, quote, receiving migrants through the Shelter and Services Program. And the Shelter and Services Program, notably, is the one getting attention right now because that's the one FEMA is involved with, and that's the one a lot of the money's going to. They say, quote, the funding will be available to 53 grant recipients for temporary shelter and other eligible costs associated with migrants, they claim, awaiting the outcome of the immigration proceedings. And even more important, notes, this $77 million, quote, builds on the more than $290 million announced through SSP in June of 2023, again, that's the Shelter and Assistance Program, which brings the total funding allocated last year to more than $770 million. That's FEMA money, folks. Now, look, partly at least, right? It's a few different areas. This is another one from the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, from August of this year. Just recently, Department of Homeland Security, August 2024, today, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and the U.S. Customs Border Protection, CBP, announced the allocation of over $380 million through the Shelter and Services Program, SSP, and through the SSP, DHS directly supports communities that are providing critical support such as food, shelter, clothing, acute medical care, and transportation to non-citizens recently released from DHS custody and awaiting their immigration court proceedings, which may take, you know, maybe a decade, right? And notes that FEMA, in coordination with CPB, is administering these SSP grants with state, local, and tribal governments, as well as non-governmental organizations to help prevent the overcrowding or short-term CBP holding facilities. In other words, the facilities of Customs Border Protection cannot hold the tens of millions of people, however much it is, maybe 7, 9 million, 10 million, who knows at this point. They say this funding augments the $259.13 million in SSP grants that DHS distributed in April of 2024. So in addition to that, right? Now, if you add that all up, it adds up to more than $1.4 billion. And look, these programs are raising concerns over why the Department of Homeland Security is declaring that FEMA doesn't have enough money for long-term relief efforts for hurricane season, as they publicly stated, right? If, for example, Alejandro Mayorkas, head of the DHS, is coming out and saying that they do not have, they have money for the current time, right now, right in front of us, current issue, they have the money for it. And when they say the rumors are fake, that's what they're suggesting, right? You can't say we don't have the money. We have enough immediate money. The issue is they're saying publicly they don't have enough money long term. They don't have enough money for the next disaster, which is going to make landfall this week, the one about to hit Florida. And, you know, again, whoever thought that Appalachia would get hit by a hurricane? The way the hurricane behaved is very strange. So we don't really know how far this next one's going to reach. We don't know how it's going to behave, given the very strange behavior of the recent one. But look, even beyond the issue of budget allocation and so on, it's causing a lot of people to compare the types of services being given to Americans who are right now suffering from disaster to the types of services being given to people who have illegally entered the country. And why are we paying upwards of $700 million a year to pay for their transportation, their medical care, their food, their clothing, and their housing? Should we be giving these types of services to anybody, let alone people who have illegally entered the United States? Again, that is the big issue being raised, and especially when it's being contrasted with American citizens who are suffering. That is what's making people angry. I would actually argue a lot of the discontent right now is not so much about whether the money was delegated or diverted, right? Which is the technicality it's on right now. But the fact that the money is being spent on it in the first place. Because Americans are saying, well, look, you will, you know, delegate $1.4 billion to that. Why didn't you delegate that to the disaster relief program so you have enough money to get through hurricane season? Divert it or not, that's not the issue. The fact that you even spent it on that when it could have been used for Americans, that is the argument. And that's why a lot of people are very unhappy right now. Now, look, it's also in that context of, you know, money for illegal immigrants that people are looking at what is being provided to Americans who have been affected by the hurricane. And one of the big claims going around is that Americans who have survived the disaster are only getting $750, you know, it's like a one-time payment. There's some technicalities with that as well. I'll be talking about this, though, only on EpicTV.com. So those of you watching on YouTube, Facebook, X, Rumble, come and join us on EpicTV.com. Click the link in the description, and not only will you get access to the rest of my show, you'll also be able to join our live Q&A where I answer your questions. And before we continue, let me show you a quick trailer from my documentary, The Final War, the 100-year plot to defeat America, which you can also watch on EpicTV.com. And with that said, I'll see you all on the rest of this episode on EpicTV.com in just a short moment.
The greatest threat facing the United States is the CCP.
The Epoch Times investigation team had studied the CCP for years, but what we uncovered was yielding evidence beyond our imagination.
With Chairman Mao, with the Prime Minister, our talks have been characterized by frankness.
The Clinton administration said, oh, don't worry about it. This will be a poison pill for China.
China's strategic goal is to make sure that the U.S. has four enemies, and one of them must be a terrorist group.
We are giving of our life's blood so that the Chinese Communist Party can survive and thrive.
Now look, it's in the context of that money for illegal immigrants that people are looking at what is being provided to Americans who have been affected by the hurricane. And look, one of the big claims going around is that Americans who have survived the disaster, right? While we're watching illegal immigrants get free housing and five-star hotel, you know, fancy hotels in New York City and free food and clothing and everything else being provided to them, that American citizens who have survived disaster are only getting $750. That's one of the big claims going around. Now, on that, let me start by showing you what FEMA says. They say this on their fact check. They say, rumor, FEMA will only provide $750 to disaster survivors to support their recovery. And they say, fact, this is false. This is a type of assistance that you may be approved for soon after you apply, called serious needs assistance. It is an upfront, flexible payment to help cover essential items like food, water, baby formula, breastfeeding supplies, medication, and other emergency supplies. It says there are other forms of assistance that you may qualify for to receive, and serious needs assistance is an initial payment you may receive while FEMA assesses your eligibility for additional funds. As your application continues to be reviewed, you may still receive additional forms of assistance for other needs, such as support for temporary housing, personal property, and home repair costs. And they say if you have questions about your disaster assistance application and what you qualify for, you can contact them at 1-800-621-3362 to speak with a FEMA representative in your language. Now, look, again, the $750 thing, they kind of shot themselves in the foot like that, because that was actually in the initial, that was in the initial statements. In fact, some of the initial first statements, that's what they said, right? And so people, when they heard that, they're like, okay, that's all we get? What the heck? People are also looking to Hawaii, which you remember they had the fires in Maui, where the same thing basically happened. People whose homes were destroyed in the fires, what do they get? Well, $750. A lot of them claim they didn't get much after that. And so, you know, it is a concern. The problem is this, basically, right? The technical distinction is that Americans can technically get additional assistance, including for temporary housing, home repair, and other things, but they have to apply for it and go through like kind of the process and then get approved, and there needs to be a review thing. So there's a lot of bureaucracy involved, right? Whereas a lot of people, when you're in the midst of a disaster, you know, you need help right away. And so when people hear they're getting $750 just up front and they may not believe that covers their needs, people, I think, are naturally going to be very angry. And again, the other question, too, is that, well, you know, will they actually be eligible for those programs? And when they hear the other statements that, yes, there's enough money for the immediate relief, but not for long-term relief, the long-term relief is typically going to be, you know, the repairs and the costs of homes and all those other things. And so when they're being told you get this initial money, but long-term you need to apply for things, and they're being told that there is not enough money long-term, that is when people naturally get very concerned about it. Again, the technicality here is that technically you can apply for additional support. And again, there needs to be a review process, and maybe Americans will be delegated some of that. I think there's going to be a very strong and very rough discussion coming up soon over whether we should maybe divert some of that money for illegal aliens to American citizens. Maybe some of that money should be diverted, right? And I think actually you're going to be hearing a lot of that. In fact, Representative Gates right now is calling for investigations into that. Because, you know, here's the question. Americans are suffering from disaster. There's not enough money for American citizens long-term, not short-term, right, which is what they're saying. Long-term. They say money has not been diverted from the $1.4 billion they've given to illegal immigrants to house and feed and take care of them. But should we divert that money for illegal immigrants to help Americans? That's going to be the question. Now look, there's also another big claim going around that in some areas people are being stopped by authorities from volunteering and to try to help areas affected by the hurricanes. And I want to show you kind of both sides in this also. FEMA says this. This is what they say on their fact check. They say, rumor, FEMA is the rumor, right? FEMA is asking for cash donations and turning away volunteers. They say, fact, this is false. FEMA does not ask for any or generally accept any cash donations or volunteers for disaster response. They say that we do encourage people who want to help to volunteer with or donate cash to reputable, voluntary, or charitable organizations. So maybe donate to an organization that's engaged in helping people with relief. They say that after a disaster, cash is often the best way to help as it provides the greatest flexibility for these reputable organizations working on the ground to purchase exactly what is needed. And they say if you encounter someone claiming to represent FEMA and asking for donations, be careful as that is likely a scam. So if someone says, hey, I'm with FEMA, want to donate, they're probably trying to scam you. It's not FEMA. They say government employees will never solicit money. Now, I've actually seen some of the a lot of the other claims on this. I know Representative Gates has actually been raising this issue as well, and he's actually calling for investigations into it. What is happening is this. There are a lot of personal claims from individuals saying that they've been blocked from volunteering, or they claim that when they were trying to bring goods, not money, which is the technicality here, not money, but goods like water or food or whatever else, they claim that they're handing it over to FEMA. They're not being allowed to donate it personally. And my personal take, just looking at all the different claims going around, is this. Some areas are letting people through. There actually are a lot of areas where average people are helping out, and they're very active with it. And, you know, we've covered it. There's a lot going on with it. Some areas, that's not the case. The issue you have oftentimes is certain disaster areas if the infrastructure has been destroyed. Like, for example, if you try to go into, like, Appalachia and the road has been destroyed and it's another disaster there, right, where they can't really access it. There have been some claims, for example, of some FEMA, you know, relief workers who say that basically even they can't access certain areas by vehicle. If they want to access them, they have to go by foot. Because the vehicles, because the roads have been destroyed, they actually can't access the areas. There's some actual technicalities with this in the way that disaster relief typically takes place. I know, for example, I have family members who are police officers. I have family in the fire department. I have family who work with like forestry services, like trying to get into hot shots right now, which is like frontline, you know, firefighting. Oftentimes when they get sent out to disaster zones, there tend to be two different roles. One of them is actually facing, you know, fires, for example. The other side is going to the houses of residents and saying, hey, you should leave, right? They can't actually make you leave. Like, if there's a fire coming for your house and you insist on staying, there's nothing they can do about it. But they still go and ask you. But what they will also do is look for bandits. It's unfortunately one of the cases, one of the realities, that when there's a disaster, there are gangs, they call them crews, and they tour. They go around the United States. They'll go state to state, and they will go to houses where people have fled, and they'll rob the houses. You have gangs that do this. And so oftentimes when there's a disaster response like this, in some areas that are more remote, this isn't the case for like major areas, police will not allow you to go in there unless you're a resident, because they don't want to deal with bandits. The other thing they often deal with is, again, if the infrastructure has been destroyed in an area, they often don't let you through. Because, look, we all like to think that we can swim, you know, in, like, hurricane waters and, you know, traverse mountains and so on, but not everybody can do it. And even sometimes the people's hearts are in the right places. What often happens is they end up getting stuck, and then they also become additional people who have to be rescued. And so it makes it hard for, in some of those areas, not every area, but it does make it hard for emergency workers to deal with that when you have a lot of people wanting to go in. Because even if like 9 out of 10 are totally fine, if 1 out of 10 ends up getting stuck and they have to rescue them as well, or pull their cars out of ditches, or they, you know, topple down a mountain because the road is out, it creates additional problems. And so oftentimes what they'll do, and you can actually, I looked at some of the stuff on Starlink, for example. One of the big claims going around is Starlink. Elon Musk has been donating, at least for a temporary amount of time, Starlink access. And a lot of emergency workers in North Carolina are saying it's been a lifesaver. They're saying that Starlink has allowed them to communicate in areas where they would not be able to communicate otherwise. It's really, according to a lot of the claims go around, helped a ton. One of the claims on that, though, was that they were not allowed to provide Starlink to certain areas because they were being blocked from providing it. But if you read the actual technical wording, they were being blocked with unless they had an escort. And so they had to wait for an escort because some of these areas are so hard hit that the infrastructure is destroyed. And so that's the technicality with that. A lot of these things, it's not quite black and white. There's a lot of gray area. And again, it goes area by area. The other big claim going around, and there's actually been videos of this. I know Glenn Beck had some videos on the ground, is that some of the FEMA relief efforts are not that active. That is one of the big claims. Representative Matt Gaetz also raised that issue. They claim that there's some mismanagement in places and that some people are just kind of sitting around waiting for orders. Some of the technicalities with that is it depends on the area based on the research I've done. In some areas, for example, where the infrastructure's out, they're not letting them like walk to these areas apparently, especially if there's like still ongoing disaster. And so you do have a lot of that. It seems on that, I can't tell you whether it's true or not. There's going to be an investigation on it. And I do think we're going to hear probably that it's not just purely black and white. You do have some areas where you probably do have those problems because there is some credible reporting on that. But there's also a lot of areas where you do have a lot of volunteers helping and a lot of average Americans are coming forward and, you know, helping their neighbors and so on. And so, again, it's one of those things that's not quite black and white. There's a lot of gray area with it. All right, folks, that said, let's jump into some questions. Let's see here. All right, let's see. Renee Lopez, you're saying, why is there a debate? It's FEMA's job to assist Americans in devastating situations, not illegals. Yeah, well, and that's one of the big arguments, because when they declare that there's a state of emergency, or like an emergency, right? There's a national emergency with the border crisis. When they declare an emergency, then they can use FEMA for disaster response. You know, this is one of the key things with politics, is that language actually means a lot. If they say something is a terror threat, that doesn't just mean they're name calling, for example. If they declare something as a terror threat, it means they can engage all the counter-terror type investigation powers, right? Which is like pre-crime type stuff. They can wiretap people, they can monitor them, they can even technically do like arrests and fly you to Guantanamo potentially. It's the same thing with disaster relief. If they declare that there is a disaster, if there's an emergency, right, a state of emergency or something like that, then they can actually use disaster relief systems, including the money for it, including the personnel for it, and including everything else. And again, you know, you always find this with public statements. There's always the technical statement. So the argument they're using is they're not diverting money, right? They're not diverting money away from disaster relief to help with the illegal immigrants. But I don't think the average American cares whether it's been diverted or not. I think a lot of Americans care that we're giving it to illegal aliens in the first place. And they're saying if we delegate a budget to a department charged, as you're saying, with disaster relief, right, then they should use that money for disaster relief, not for housing and feeding and taking care of people violating American law. You know, I think that's one of the arguments a lot of people have. But, you know, you remember, folks, before this even hit, I was saying that this was going to happen. I was saying, actually, this will probably really impact the elections. This will have a huge impact on the elections, one way or the other. And I was saying that one of the big issues people are going to have is if they see themselves being treated with less benefits than illegal immigrants are receiving, they will be furious. And that is now what you're watching. Even if they get free hotels and free food and free everything else, a lot of people are going to look and say, well, look, this is the same thing they give to illegal aliens. You know, I probably deserve better. I would agree with them. I think American citizens, you know, when you pay tax dollars, you're paying into something that's supposed to benefit you. And a lot of people are saying, well, what am I getting out of it? Why are you giving my money to people who shouldn't be here in the first place? You know, that is one of the common sentiments you're seeing going around. And when people get much less, not even less, but significantly less than what is being given to illegal immigrants, then that's when you get people really angry. And I think a lot of what you're seeing right now, I think what you're seeing right now in terms of, you know, a lot of the conversations on X and a lot of the people posting videos on Twitter and TikTok and so on, you know, talking about their experience, they're mad. You know, they're really unhappy about this. And I think that is you know, justifiable when they see the way that money's being used in other areas. And again, you know, in my personal take, they argue money has not been diverted, but maybe they should consider diverting money from the illegals to Americans. You know, maybe that's the solution. Actually, something really interesting just happened as well. The Biden administration just announced they will not be renewing the parole for four different groups of illegal immigrants, including Haitians. And so I don't know what that's going to look like come election season, or, you know, come the elections, and especially after the elections, when, you know, there's a time between the elections and the inauguration where the country is going to be an interesting place to live, just put it that way. And if individuals who've been receiving free housing and free food and everything else through the government suddenly lose all of that, and you have a few months where, you know, if Trump wins, for example, and they're going to be kicked out of the country, or if he loses and the money's not there anyways for these people, you're going to be watching some wild stuff, folks. So we'll see how that goes. But maybe they are eliminating the service for some of these individuals also. I don't know how it's being delegated and so on, but I can say they have announced they will be ending the parole for four different groups of illegal immigrants. I'll be going to that actually more maybe tomorrow. I want to do kind of a longer piece on that. California gal, you're saying, if people lost their homes and don't have a computer, how easy is it for them to apply for financial aid? Yeah, so that's actually been one of the concerns a lot of people have been raising as well. I saw there were videos, there's a lot of videos online, of course. Some individuals were talking to FEMA representatives who are present at some of the areas where the disasters have hit. And, you know, what is FEMA doing? Well, they set up shop and people can go there. And some of the people going up to these FEMA workers are saying, hey, what are y'all doing here? They're like, well, you know, we're providing assistance. People can come to us and talk. They're like, well, what about people? How do people know you're here? And like, well, they can access it online. They can see it on television, so on. They're like, well, people don't have internet or electricity. How are they going to find you? Right? And so that's the challenge. The important part with people who are totally cut off like that, a lot of that is more in like Western North Carolina, where you have that level of disaster, and a few other areas, meaning it's not everywhere. But yeah, in those areas, it seems really dire still, just going by some of the reporting I've seen. The situation does seem really dire for some of those individuals still. And so, you know, some areas they can still access the internet, or they've gotten to areas of safety where they, you know, can access services. Not everybody's going to be able to get to it. That's part of what's happening right now, unfortunately. Troy NM, you're saying traffic flow control, bandits and looters are serious concerns. Yeah, you know, I don't often talk about my family. On my dad's side of the family, there's something in the blood of the guys. All of us kind of have dangerous jobs. You know, I think just about every guy works in, like, you know, it's you know, a sheriff's deputy, or, you know, I have a cousin who's a fire chief. I have another cousin who's trying to get into hot shots right now, for example. You know, I have cousins who work in, like, you know, armed guard security, stuff like that. And so, you know, I tend to hear a lot of stories from them about what's happening. And a lot of them, they don't ever want to go on media because of, you know, it just creates problems for you. They don't want to do it. But I do kind of get an insider take of how a lot of the disaster response is going, what is happening with crime, what's happening with gangs, what they're dealing with behind the scenes. I can tell you actually, for example, a lot of my family's in California. I'm from San Diego originally. I can tell you they deal with the fires a lot, and some of them also get moved to other states to help fight fires and disasters when there's big things happening. The gangs are a really big problem. The gangs, you know, crews that go around are a really big problem. And they do have the issue that these crews, these gangs, a lot of times they'll come from Los Angeles or other places. They'll cross state lines when there's disasters. They will travel for the disasters, and they'll rob people's homes. It's a huge problem. And, you know, keep in mind, it might not be like a ton of them, but, you know, you get five crews, maybe 50 guys who, you know, in the entire United States who tour and do this stuff, it ends up being a big problem just because of that. And so, you know, police oftentimes will have to deal with that. And again, the other issue you're going to have is when you have a remote area hit by disaster. Not like a major center where, you know, for example, remember in Louisiana when the levees broke and you had a lot of, you had the redneck Navy, they called themselves, guys in fishing boats who were going and rescuing people. When you deal with disasters in big areas, you typically do have a lot of community involvement helping with disaster relief. But when you get to more remote areas and where there might be only a single road that works as a service road, it becomes a lot more difficult, because if you have too much traffic along the service road, it means one, that the emergency relief, you know, efforts, like from like the official, like police and fire department, they risk not being able to access the service road. And also if the road goes out, oftentimes it does happen that well-intentioned people end up getting themselves in trouble. They, you know, their car goes off the road or they get stuck in the mud, you know, really common problems, and then they also need to be rescued. And so in some of those types of areas, police, fire department, FEMA in this case, they don't really want, they want the help, but it interferes with it. And so I understand that perspective, right? Because I know a lot of the guys who do disaster relief, and I know a lot of the people who have to deal with that kind of stuff, you know? And sure, you have a lot of people who are experienced and maybe have the know-how to deal with situations like that, but not everybody does. And it only takes one out of, you know, 20 people to make it so that they don't want to let everybody in, you know? Judy Akim, you're saying, include bureaucracy anywhere, and you are creating a barrier for people and secret approval flows and bottlenecks for bureaucrats to abuse power. It is often the problem, right? You know, again, I do think we're better off having some of these services in place. Like, I'm glad we have a fire department to put out fires, for example. I'm glad that police can have organized efforts to go and try to keep bandits out of areas hit by disaster. Like, you know, in some areas, it's good that we have emergency services to deal with it. If you left firefighting totally up to, like, well, you know, there are good volunteer firefighting programs, but they're often, you know, pretty well regulated and managed, right? But if you don't really have anything in place, you might not have anything when it comes down to it. I do think that bureaucratic processes can be very difficult, though, and I do think that within bureaucracy, when the system becomes too big, there is the risk of having a lot of oversight or a lot of things being missed, you know? I do think actually one of the big problems a lot of Americans are going to face is going to be the long-term relief with this. And the application process, the approval process, which depends on the inspection process, you know, and they're saying even in terms of like rebuilding some of the roads and bridges in some of the more remote areas that have been cut off, it's going to take months. And if they don't have the budget for it, which they're saying they might have the immediate one, but not the long-term one, you know, this is going to be a disaster for a long time. Look at Hawaii, right now in Maui, where the fires hit, and you know, you still have, it's, people are still struggling there. And you know, how long has it been? Remember with Maui too, people weren't talking about so much illegal, well, they were talking about illegal immigrants getting money, but they were also saying, look, you're sending hundreds of billions to Ukraine, great, but what about the American people, you know? America is a very giving country, but when you give so much that you ignore your own household, people do start to get a little concerned, right? I think it's natural you're going to see that. People will start saying, you know, you can send money to every corner of the earth, but, you know, you got to take care of your own people also. And, you know, and I think it's a fair argument for them to say that. I don't think it's extreme for people to feel that way, you know what I mean? And I think it's natural that people are going to feel wronged when they feel they're being kind of forgotten or abandoned. I do think it's a very legitimate grievance people are having right now, frankly. Ashley from California, you're saying, so disaster relief is a loan, but illegals get free everything. Make it make sense. Yeah, right? Personally, I don't believe we should be giving that type of assistance to illegal immigrants. Not only because I don't think it solves anything. This is my personal opinion. I think that if you have people in Latin America, they're not fleeing, some are, but for the most part they're not. They're not fleeing like genocide or something like that, right? They're not fleeing that type of thing. A lot of times what they're fleeing is gang violence. Now, if you want to solve those problems, what do you do? Well, why don't we, if we really are dedicated to helping them, why don't we help them fight the gangs or help institute tough on crime policies? You actually find the opposite. There are criticisms from, not as a whole, but certain individuals, and also especially from a lot of the media, criticizing Ecuador and criticizing El Salvador and other countries that are enacting tough on crime policies to actually, you know, fix the problem, to deal with it. And, you know, if you fix the problem, people don't need to abandon their homes in the first place. And don't you think they'd be better off not having to abandon their homes and try to trek to the United States and, you know, help support human traffickers and drug cartels along the way, because a lot of the trafficking efforts are supported by drug cartels? Yeah, I think that'd probably be a better solution. And then you don't have to make Americans take care of them either. I'd say using maybe a small fraction of the money that we've had to spend here to care for these individuals could have been used more effectively and much better, maybe helping fund some of the law enforcement programs in those countries. And if we did that, it would also probably help stem the flow of like fentanyl into America. Everybody wins. The question is, personally, I don't think America is obligated to do any of this, right? I don't think it's our responsibility to take care of the entire world. I don't think it is. I think it's out of the goodness of Americans' hearts that we do, but I don't think we technically are required to. And, you know, I don't think we have like an obligation for it, in other words, at least not on this level, right? And so, yeah, it does bring up the issue of whether we should be giving this money to these individuals in the first place. And not to mention that once you do create an incentive, if you put a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, people might try to go and traverse it to go and find it, you know what I mean? And they've put a big fat pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, you know? Imagine you're in a country living in poverty and gangs are terrorizing you, and then all of a sudden, you know, the United States is offering you, you know, maybe on a weekly basis, more money than you're going to make in a year. What are you going to do? Hey, free house and free health care and free food and free hotel in New York City, if I just walk there, yeah, I think I'll do it. You know what I mean? Once you incentivize it, of course people are going to take it. And so I think it's been a crisis created through, ironically, the solution, you know, the solution, which is basically provide money for it. You provide money for it, you incentivize it to become worse. And, you know, that's where we're at, right? And I think we're finding now as a country that we don't have enough money for it. You know, if there's not enough money for American citizens, at least not in the long term, they can say that immediately they have enough money. But if there's not enough money to care for American citizens, then we do not have enough money for it, right? We don't have the money for it. And so, you know, at what point do we also stop giving them free handouts and start taking care of American citizens? I do think you're going to see this reflected in the polls. I do think you're going to see this reflected when people go and cast their votes. And, you know, I've been watching some of the news coverage on this. You know, some people were criticizing some of the different news outlets because, you know, they're suggesting the areas, a lot of the areas hit are Republican strongholds. And they're saying that these areas would have voted for Donald Trump, right? That's actually one of the big arguments you're seeing in a lot of news coverage. And they're saying that, you know, who knows? I know some of you raised last time we were talking about this, that what about mail-in ballots? What if mail-in ballots got lost in these disasters? We don't really know, but it's possible. I saw that in some areas you had, I believe the number was 40,000 mail-in ballots sent and just over 1,000 returned, which could mean there's 38 or 39,000 unaccounted for mail-in ballots to some of these disaster-stricken areas, suggesting, again, this is becoming an issue of election integrity. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis has actually instituted some kind of emergency measures for the elections, and people are pressuring now North Carolina to do the same. As far as last I've heard, I have not seen any response on that, and people are saying maybe you should. This is my take on that in particular. I do think that, you know, if they want to make all this noise around election integrity, you know, one way or the other, or access to voting, that shouldn't be limited to areas that are, that, you know, benefit you politically, frankly. Just because an area is going to vote Republican doesn't mean that, you know, you don't have to provide them services to make sure they can cast their votes, when the prevailing narrative is everybody should be able to cast a vote. I think it's disingenuous in my opinion, right? And so I do think it's an election issue. It's an election interference issue, if not from an individual, but from a natural disaster. And it does need to be addressed because, again, it goes against the prevailing narrative of access to elections, right? And if they don't provide access to elections just because these people might vote for the party they don't like, I don't think it's responsible, frankly. You know, again, in my opinion, right? On that side, though, I do think there's a bit of ivory tower thinking going on here. And let me explain the way I see it. So the ivory tower thinking is this. You know, you think like your upper echelon types, right? Your Harvard graduate types, the more like educated people who think that everybody thinks like them, right? Think like New York and California. You know, a lot of those people who kind of look down on middle America, right? The people who say, oh, those crazy people in middle America. I'm not saying this personally, but you do see this mentality, right? There's a misunderstanding I think they have of how Americans vote. Yes, you have Republicans and you have Democrats, right? You have Republicans and you have Democrats. But a lot of Americans are not locked into that. I know people who voted for Barack Obama who are absolutely going to vote for Donald Trump. I know a lot of people like that, right? There's a lot of people, they might even be registered with one party, but they're going to vote for another party because they're not locked into that black and white type of thinking. And especially when you get to middle America, especially when you get to Appalachia, people aren't going to be looking at Republican, Democrat. They're going to be looking at my neighbors, my community, my people. That's what they're going to be voting on. And it doesn't matter if it's, hey, that town over is Republicans, and so good riddance. It's not going to be like that, based on what I know from the people I've met in these areas. I don't think Americans think that way. And I think within the media environment, this ivory tower thinking, they don't understand the average American. You know, frankly, I don't think they understand the average American. People in a lot of these communities are not as locked into Republican, Democrat, hardline thinking. A lot of them are not like that. It's a lot more kind of focused, again, on their own issues, right? Their own communities. And they'll be looking at which one represents the interests of the people of their areas more so than just hardline voting for, you know, a party allegiance or something. So I think there's going to be a lot of miscalculations in terms of the way this is going to affect the elections. Again, my personal take based on people I know, right? Sandra Harley, you're saying immigrants should apply legally to enter the U.S. Joshua is right. Giving them handouts leads to becoming reliant on the state. These people need to grow in wealth and educate in the U.S., not be encouraged to refuse to work. Yeah, and I've made the point, I'm not actually against normal immigration. You know, my wife is, you know, her family's from Cambodia, but she grew up in Paris. She's an immigrant. Actually, on my dad's side of the family, most of my cousins are half Mexican. I grew up in that, you know, kind of... I grew up going to birthday parties every weekend. Let's put it that way. You know, anybody who grew up in families like that know that every single weekend it's somebody's birthday, and you know, we had taco barbecues all the time. You know, I grew up around that. A lot of my family is half Mexican. I'm personally not, but I grew up around it. A lot of these people are not so different from any other Americans I've met. And I think actually the division in thinking is, I don't think it's really accurate. You know, I grew up in a time when I didn't even think about race. You know, when I mean, and I'm, a lot of us here, I think maybe not until like 2010 or around 2012 maybe, did race even become much of an issue in America. Yeah, you could say earlier than that it was problematic, but I think for the most part it was gone. I didn't even think about the race of my friends growing up. If I look back, I had my friend group was, there was a kid who was Indian Mexican, you know, Native American Mexican. I had a friend who was Italian. I had a black friend, and that was like our, that was my friend group. You know what I mean? But we never thought about it like that. It was just, you know, Ryan or Jacob or, you know, Shaboye or whatever else, right? And, you know, and that was the way we thought about it. It wasn't like, this kid is this race and we need to focus on that. We didn't care, actually. And really, and I think for a lot of Americans, that thinking is still there. The issue, I think, with older immigration versus what's happening now, though, is that it used to be that people coming to America, immigrating, a lot of it during the Cold War, a lot of it was people escaping communism. And so you had people coming here seeking freedom. A lot of it going further back was people escaping religious persecution. And so America was formed by immigrant communities who wanted freedom. They wanted freedom. And they wanted freedom of opportunity. A lot of them came here as entrepreneurs. It used to be that a lot of the Mexican immigrants, and my dad, you know, growing up, we had a restaurant. A lot of our workers were Mexicans. You know, a lot of them would come here wanting to work, and they were humble and they were kind, and they'd say, you know, they were grateful for it. When you go from offering opportunity to offering handouts, you change the nature of the individual. Because what they want then is more handouts. They don't want more opportunity, right? Because the thing that's sustaining them is free handouts, not their own hard work and not their own personal effort. And so you can risk changing the nature of, again, kind of why people come here, which affects, I think, the culture of those communities, depending on what incentivizes them to come. And I believe, actually, that this is really terrible, frankly. I personally, again, I'm pro-immigration, but I'm very anti-free handouts. I think the free handouts are causing a lot of problems, personally. And on a funny note, if you go back and read some of the original writings from the Founding Fathers, they complained about the new people coming to America. You know what they complained about? They were complaining that all these immigrants from Europe and stuff were coming to America, not because they believe in the American idea, but because they didn't want to pay taxes. Because, you know, early America, you didn't have to pay taxes. You know, the no taxes thing was like one of the big benefits of coming here. And they were like, oh, these people, they don't believe in our values. They just don't want to pay taxes. I'm not joking. Like, this is like, you know, early founding of America writings. They're really funny. And hey, I can get behind that. I can appreciate that mentality too. All right, folks, that said, thank you so much for being here. Please share this episode. Help us get the word out on Crossroads. Tell a friend or family member about it. It does really help us quite a bit. Also, again, I'll be doing the show live Q&A Monday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Join me tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing you all again. As always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.